Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight, we have a horrifying tale about this guy who hasn't seen his buddy in quite some time, who works for the city for the CCTV surveillance cameras. What he shows him one night when he finally gets invited over will terrify you. Stay tuned. If you're new to the channel, subscribe. Click on that bell and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. Now, let's get spooky. I haven't seen Mike in a few months. He had been buried in work, and our usual weekend nights out had about disappeared. When he called me on a Thursday and invited me over for some drinks, I jumped at the invite, but took note of how depressed he sounded on the phone. By the time I got there, Mike had already started drinking and was slurring his words. A dark cloud seemed to hover over him, which got worse as we drank. I finally asked what's been going on with him. Mike turned darker, afraid. He said it had to do with work. I never really knew what Mike did for a living. I did know that he worked for the city in the tech department and was involved with the CCTV surveillance network. But I never knew what his day-to-day operations were, which he began to describe in detail. Mike explained there were thousands of cameras scattered throughout the downtown core, outlying neighborhoods as well into the suburbs of our 1 million-plus city. His responsibility was to categorize and archive all the incoming footage. Most of the footage went into very general classifications and were saved in hard drive farms for categorical archiving. They were truly meant to be forgotten about. It was an expansive task, but Mike designed and built an AI screening program that detected common patterns in footage, then sectioned out anomalous behavior for review. The vast majority wasn't noteworthy, something like 99.99%. But then there was that 0.01%, the car accidents, assaults, swarmings, rapes, abductions, murders. Those went into the special archive for use in criminal investigations. And then there was the 0.0001%. They were held in a classified archive and contained footage capturing events that for all accounts were unexplainable. This was called the Tartarus Archive. I looked up the word Tartarus after and discovered it was one of the darkest, deepest prisons from Greek mythology. It was said that if you dropped an anvil from heaven, it would take 7 days for it to reach the earth. It would take another 7 days for the anvil to reach Tartarus. It was the place that you sent the Titans when there was nowhere else that could contain them. When Sisyphus was condemned to an eternity of futility and frustration with a large boulder and a mountain slope, that punishment was carried out its Tartarus. As it turns out, the name was quite fitting for the archive's growing contents. Some footage could be simplified to strange optical anomalies in the camera and coincidences of the light, and crackheads on a bender through a subway system. Other footage, though, defied logic. The others are what captured Mike's mind that evening. He had been breaking protocol and bringing hard drives home at night. In fact, he had been splicing the footage together, capturing and compiling repeat aberrations and editing them into linear sequences. Mike wanted to show me some. It wasn't in a bragging or showing off kind of way. It felt more like a sharing of a heavy burden kind of way. I asked if showing me would get him in trouble, but he weighed the idea. I said, yeah, obviously. I wanted to see what was going on in my city. Mike led me into his workroom, where he had monitors and towers and piles of externals set up. We sat down, and he skimmed through some of the drives nervously. Then, he landed on one. Mike told me this anomaly was codenamed Lincoln Spectre. He pressed play. On the largest screen, black and white footage started up, showing Lincoln Avenue, one of our less attractive downtown streets, at 3 a.m. The camera angle showed the length of Lincoln Avenue as it led into the downtown core. The street appeared empty and quiet. From a side road, a woman emerged, walking towards the camera. As she approached the intersection, she turned over her shoulder and appeared to scream. The woman took off, sprinting past the camera, which cut into a new, wider angle from another camera across the street. I watched the woman running frantically, seemingly being chased. But she was the only one on the street. There was no one else anywhere around her. The woman kept screaming as she ran, and the cameras kept following, cutting between different CCTV angles. We watched as the woman was chased into the middle of an empty intersection. She fell, then cowered as if something massive was standing over her. The woman's neck stiffened, and she began to levitate off the ground. Her body looked like a rag doll as something lifted her by the throat until she was floating a dozen feet above the ground in the middle of an intersection. Then the woman's head snapped to the left, then her body fell back to the ground. The video ended and went black. I sat shocked. Mike saw my expression and said, "You ain't seen nothing yet." I asked if that was real. If what I had seen was unaltered, was raw footage. Mike said all he had done was put the clips together. None of the content has been touched. He told me he found out that the incident ended up being described as a hit and run, and the case was left figuratively open and more evidence to amiss. Which it never would. The department kept the footage hidden, claiming it was a camera malfunction. No one outside of Mike and his boss had seen the video of how the poor woman actually died. I started to understand the air of somberness Mike was carrying around. Mike started the next video. This one was codenamed Black Crab and was much longer than the previous one. It started in a subway system at an underground Walkley station shortly after closing up for the night. Walkley was the last stop on the route, and the exterior was shouldering by a new housing development on the side and untouched forest and swampland on the other. The camera was pointing down along the subway platform on the east side, and showed its entire length with benches and garbage cans populating it. At the far end, the tunnel was filled with darkness. The lights on the platform shut off and the station went dark. The camera switched to night vision, and everything became visible again. My eyes trained on the platform, waiting for something to happen. Finally, there was movement. It was coming from the tunnel. It was difficult to identify what exactly it was at first, as its movements were strange and the footage was grainy. But it got closer to the camera, and I got a better look. It resembled a human, a man, but he was walking on his hands and feet, upside down, with his neck arched and his stomach pointed to the ceiling. He had long, dark hair and dragged along the ground as he wore tattered layers of old jackets and torn pants. He moved like a crab, jerkily yet quickly and easily as he made his way to the staircase. The footage cut to a new camera in the dark hallway leading to the stairs out of the station. We watched the crab walker crawl up two steps at a time and then crawl over the turnstiles and towards the exit. The footage cut again, now showing the exterior of the station's entrance. The crab walker squeezed and twisted and maneuvered his body through the locked and closed entrance gate. It looked impossible to accomplish, but he did it. Once outside, the crab walker eyed his surroundings before skittering off towards the woods and disappearing. The footage cut to an hour later and revealed the crab walker reappearing from the woods. He was dragging a small animal by the tail in its teeth. The animal looked like a cat. The crab walker squeezed back through the gate, crawling through the station and disappearing into the subway tunnel.
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customized coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping.
It's just so beautiful. Oh yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Again, Mike saw my expression and told me there was more. He showed me the length of the video, which was over an hour long. Mike had compiled over 20 sequences of the crab walker creeping out of the subway station and into the woods. Mike skimmed through the video towards the end, and we watched the crab walker come out of the sewer in a downtown alleyway. It crawled over to a pile of garbage bags and cardboard boxes. Then it jumped into them and some kind of vicious frenzy ensued. There was someone else in the pile of garbage, hands and feet thrashing about as they were struggling for their life. Then the movement stopped and the hands and feet went still. The crab walker's body moved jerkily about, but I couldn't see what was happening because of the darkness and all the garbage bags and the boxes obscuring the camera's view. Mike leaned over to me and whispered that the crab walker was eating the homeless man. This caused a criminal investigation as the dead body was found mutilated and festering in the open alleyway. Mike followed up on the inquiry. What he discovered was the crab walker, who was authorities believed to be a man named David Fletcher. Decades ago, David had been a prominent lawyer with a family. One Christmas, there was a house fire and his wife and kids were killed in the blaze. It was David's fault. He lost everything, including his mind. Everyone has a breaking point, whether they know it or not. A place where they bend too far and then snap. David found his. Family and friends described his descent as nightmarish. David lived on the streets, became addicted to drugs, and tumbled into mental illness. The last anyone knew of him was from 10 years prior. He had thrown himself in front of a subway at the Wakali station, and no one had heard from or saw him again. It appeared that somehow David had survived the subway hit. His back had broken and healed strangely, causing him to move the way he did. He adapted to the new posture and lived in the darkness of the subway tunnels, finding sustenance from drain water and the wild animals he caught. That was what Mike found out, at least. But then he said, that was just the answer the investigators gave in discovery. Who knows where the truth lay? Mike said there was always an answer for the videos he saw. Whether the answers were true or not, no one knew. But the ones that had to become public all needed explanations, however absurd. Either way, David was never found and didn't reappear on the subway footage. Mike plugged a new hard drive in. He poured me a fresh drink and told me this was the one that was troubling him. The file was codenamed Cloud Mirror. I wasn't sure I wanted to see it, but before I could object, Mike pressed play. All the monitors lit up with footage from different intersections downtown, on the exact date and time as each other. There were 5 in total. The streets on each screen were empty and quiet, no cars or people. Suddenly, at the exact same time in the center of the intersection, a small globe pulsed into existence. It was some kind of orb, roughly the size of a bowling ball. The streetlights around it pulsed with energy waves as the orb grew larger. It grew to the size of a beach ball. Then, it flashed out. The streetlights went back to normal, and the intersection was as lifeless as it was before. I asked Mike what they were. He told me he had gigs of footage of the orbs and had watched them repeatedly. He told me he didn't know what they were at first. Then, they started to change. Mike clicked on to the next video. Again, the five monitors lit up with the same intersections at the time of night, but several weeks later. The streetlights glowed and pulsed as an orb manifested into existence again. It grew to its beach ball size, but then altered its surface and glow. Something gas-like replaced it, growing outward into a couch-sized cloud of gray. One of the cameras was closer, so I got to see the small clouds in detail. It looked like a volcanic eruption wrapping around itself. They were large, constantly morphing blobs that curled outward from a glowing center, resembling a mandelbulb fractal as a gaseous-based organism. It was fascinating to see them floating in the center of the street, so alien to our roads and stoplights and street lamps. Then they began to move, gliding down empty roads. The cameras cut the different angles, following the clouds on some unknown path, zigging and zagging onto new streets and through alleyways. Then they stopped. The clouds hovered into the center of their intersection. They'd lower to the ground level, standing straight up like a large coffin. Holding rigid to the shape, their exteriors continued the shift and mold together like magnets made of smoke. Something on one of the monitors caught my eye. Down the street, people appeared. They had seen the cloud and were walking towards it. The group looked drunk and fascinated by the floating entity. So much so, they were approaching it. As they did, the cloud became brighter. The street lamps around it pulsed. The group were in some kind of trance, staring into the morphing blob. One of the group, a guy, stared into it like a zombie, then walked right into the cloud and disappeared. None of the group tried to stop him. Instead, another one followed him in, and another, and another. All five members of the group disappeared into the cloud. Then they reappeared, one at a time, the guy first, then in the order they all went in. Only they weren't stumbling and drunk now. They were walking upright, using minimal movements. They formed in a perfect five-person circle for several seconds over quick words, then turned and all went in separate directions. Their strides, arm swings, and speed all matched. Another monitor showed a similar situation with a large group of people, lost in reverie as they marched, one after another, into the cloud. Each monitor showed the same thing now. People entering the clouds and coming back out. Different. Mike stopped the video. I asked him if he had shown this to anyone else. He said he hadn't. Not even to his one boss. Which was a problem. Because he had a meeting with his boss in the morning to discuss the missing footage. I asked why he didn't show the footage to his boss. This footage seemed more than serious. People were being replaced by something. Mike sighed and put a new video on. The monitor lit up and showed a new downtown street. The date was from earlier this week. One of the clouds was floating at the intersection. A middle-aged couple were walking nearby, the husband with a slight limp in his right leg. The couple saw the cloud and were sucked in by its aura. They approached it, eyes wide and mouths open. Both the husband and wife entered the cloud and disappeared. After a moment, they reappeared. The husband limp was gone. Mike turned to me and said, "That was my boss and his wife."